Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio.
Nerd alert.
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 95 of Nerd Pride Radio. 95, quick trivia quiz. How many theses were there in Martin Luther's 95 Theses? That's right, 95. Okay, another one. How many poems were there in E.E. Cummings' collection entitled 95 Poems? Right, also 95. You guys are really good at this. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week, Fawn Leibowitz. Wait, what's that? Oh, okay. Apparently Ms. Leibowitz died in a tragic kiln explosion. So sitting in for her instead, Shelley Dubinsky. All right. Before I get started in the podcast proper, I need to finish last week. Last week, I discussed all of the fun that we had on Father's Day. And I forgot, completely forgot that, oh yeah, Friday of that weekend, we had a couple of friends over, one cousin, one friend. And so we've got all these boys in the house, and we decided we're all going to go out to the pool and go swimming. And we've got, our pool is a little water park. It's not huge. A couple of water slides, wave pool, play area for the kids, all sorts of stuff. But anyway, it's not giant, but it's great for a little local pool. Wonderful. So we take all the kids out there for family night. We show up. We get to the front desk. There's a big sign that says, oh, sorry, we're closing at 6 o'clock because there's family night tonight at the pool. And we didn't realize it was going to be family night at the pool. In fact, it was a rescheduled family night. We had no clue. So here we are. It's like there's only a half hour left before they shut the pool down, and then it won't reopen again until 7 o'clock. And we're like, well, crap, we don't want to swim for a half hour, but do we want to wait around until 7 o'clock? I mean, you know, is that all right? Whatever. We'll wait. So we went out. We had some dinner. Came back for family night at the pool. And let me tell you what. A blast, because it got rescheduled, they didn't advertise it very well. There just weren't a lot of people there. And so we had the whole pool to ourselves. I mean, not completely to ourselves, but pretty much. And they had a sponsor that paid for giant inflatable hamster balls to throw the kids in, and then they walk out on the water in the giant hamster balls. It was cool. And we played, and we had a great time. And then, and here's the part, we didn't even stay for this part, but it's so cool I have to talk about it, is every family night at the pool, they always do a movie. Well, this year, they've finally set up a movie screen, giant movie screen, over the wave pool. Like, literally, giant movie screen over the wave pool, so that if we had hung around for the movie, it was going to be The Incredibles, even. I wish we had hung around, but kids had to get home. It's too bad. But movie starts just as it's getting dark out, and then you get an inner tube, and you float on the wave pool in a crowd of people while you watch a movie. Holy crow. I can't imagine more fun. I mean, okay, I can imagine a lot more fun, but this in particular is still a lot of fun. And we didn't get to stay for that one because, again, kids had to get home. But next family night that comes around, oh, you can bet we're going to be there. I hope they're playing something good. Because, again, the idea, and we got in, I mean, it was our family of, there were five of us because obviously we've got the one son who's away. But there's five of us plus the cousin and the friends. We got seven people total. They let us in the door as a group for $20 for the whole group of us. $20 And all of us got to go in and swim and do the hamster balls and play around. And it was like 2 hours worth of swimming fun. And then had we stayed, that $20 also included a movie on the water. You cannot beat that. So next family night that comes around, you can bet we're going to be there because it was a blast. Even not staying for the movie, it was a blast. Next time it'll be even better because we'll be able to plan accordingly. We'll know what's going on and we'll actually be able to stay. So anyway, that was the other thing that happened last weekend. So in addition to all the other stuff I described to you, we also had family night at the pool. How cool. But now, wrap that up. Last week's podcast is officially finished. Now I can do the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. And this is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff off that list, out of my handy-dandy pocket mod, gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. I'm holding up the pocket mod. I'm waving it in your faces as if you can see it. Does that emphasize my point? Look at it. Pocket mod. Okay. First thing on the master list. I thought I lost all my notes. Not the pocket mod itself. The pocket mod's still here, but all of the stuff I was going to talk about today. I have three major topics today, and all three of them I had done some research, not extensive, but enough research that I could jot down some notes. I would have some names available, points to make that I don't forget things. I actually wrote down all these notes, and then last week when we recorded, we did all the Father's Day stuff, so I just cut all that stuff out, shoved it aside, figured I'll save it for this week. And then I got to this week, and I can't find any of my notes. I'm just gone. No idea what I did with them. And I almost didn't record today. I almost didn't record because I was thinking, I had all that work, and now what am I going to do? You know me. I can't just wing it. What would this podcast be like if I just came out and just made stuff up as I went along? Horrible. That's what it would be like. Fortunately, at the last minute, I did find where I put my notes. But even before I found them, I had made the resolve that I was just going to come out. My plan was to just cover the same topics anyway. Even without my notes, I'll just muscle through it and we'll see what happens. Fortunately, you guys don't have to put up with me doing that because I actually have my notes. So, the first thing on my list...
And now for something completely different.
That's right, it's time for something completely different. This is just stuff that doesn't fit my usual categories and segments that I normally do. And this time, all I have written down here on my pocket mod is the word transracial. That's right, I'm going to do race stuff. I'm going to talk about Rachel Dolezal. I don't know how to pronounce her name because I've only ever seen it in writing. I haven't seen any news reports or clips. But Rachel Dolezal, and this is all 3-4 weeks old now, so it's old news, but she's the civil rights activist who presented herself as African-American when she was not actually African-American. And there's been a whole bunch of outrage over it. She even marked down on forums that she was African-American and Native American, apparently. And it turns out that she's just a white girl who's been posing. And you can get into nitpicky details of did she ever actually claim to be black? Well, yeah, she did because she put it on forms. But, she's claiming that, people just made assumptions because, she's appropriate. No, it doesn't matter. The whole point here is the reason I wrote the word transracial is my brother Daniel linked to a really cool article on it, and I wish I had the original link for it. I can go back and find it. It was on Facebook somewhere. But it pointed out that transracial, in this case, in the sense of Rachel Dolezal, people are using the word transracial just as they would use transgendered, as in someone who feels the identity that they were born with or that society put upon them because of their genetics doesn't match the person that they feel they are. And so a transgendered person is someone who feels that they were born as the wrong gender and are looking to live as or present as or transition to being another gender. And so transracial then just seemed like a natural term for people to adopt for someone like Rachel Dolezal who was born white but clearly wants to be black, tries to be black, presents herself as black. And my brother pointed out in this article, not that he wrote the article, but he shared the article and therefore I read it. Okay, anyway. This article points out that transracial is a term that already exists. It's a term that already for 40, 50 years has been used for a completely other purpose. And therefore, the idea that people are taking it on as this cutesy shorthand for referring to this one woman is misleading and damaging to the current use of the word, which is the existing use of the word transracial is persons who are adopted by another ethnicity. So, for example, my brother Daniel is Korean. He was born in Korea, and my family adopted him when he was 10 months old, and he's been my brother ever since. And so here he is, a Korean child who has been raised as a white family. That would make him a transracial person, a transracial adoptee. And in his own life, he's had, everyone has their own issues growing up with trying to figure out who they are and where they fit in the world. And Daniel has gone through very similar stuff with the added complication of, the same growing up identity stuff that everyone has, but he's also had this added thing of expectations that society puts on him simply because of his appearance versus the culture that was he was raised with, and how much of his Korean heritage, his Korean culture, how much of that does he want to adopt for himself? How much of that does he incorporate into his own identity and figure out where his place is? And so this whole transracial business is a huge deal. It's an important concept for many, many people and something that lots of people deal with. And so therefore, for Rachel Dolezal to come along, who is really a pathological liar. And I mean, this is the biggest issue because as I'm discussing this with Daniel, I mentioned I can't remember my exact words, but I was coming up with some meta point and trying to show that I'm at least a little bit versed on the topic, or that I'm, at least sensitive and have looked at it a little bit. I don't want to look like a complete idiot in front of my brother because he's way more versed in this area than I am. So I'm trying to show that I have a little bit of knowledge, and I'm trying to say, well, the issue here is the idea of cultural appropriation and racial identity. And he says, well, the main point is that she lied. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, okay, I get that too. But really, in all honesty, and that's where it came down to for me, is, yeah, you know what? Flat out, she just lied. And he's absolutely right. The idea that she, I get where she was. All right. I get the idea that you're in a position where, she had black siblings. She has identified with, black friends, black boyfriends, she's been part of that culture in a lot of ways. And the civil rights activism that she took up was incredibly important to her. She's very involved in the black community, very much wants to help. And I can see being in a position where she gets a lot of people not taking her as seriously as they should because, well, yeah, but, you're a white girl. What do you know? Or, you haven't lived it. You haven't. And so just to take on those aspects of black culture, getting her hair permed and, that obvious tan that she's got going, and presenting herself in such a way that when people make that assumption, well, she doesn't correct them because, well, it makes her job a little bit easier. Now suddenly she's got a little more cred in the field that she's working in, with the situation she's dealing with. Having that credibility as a black person made her job a little easier. And it apparently snowballed to the point where she's willing to just completely flat out lie that she, claims on government forms, on applications, to be black. And she tells stories of the oppression that she's faced, the discrimination that she's faced. Many of the stories proven that, yeah, she just made them up. The idea that she's in a position where she had to know. She had to live with the constant fear that, at any moment, all it takes is, pictures of her childhood to come out. Her parents to, once she's important enough in the field that her family is being interviewed for stuff, eventually, someone's going to notice she's a white girl. All right. And she had to know that her entire career was on the line. Her whole life, everything she's built for herself is on the line because she keeps perpetuating this lie. She had to know that. And yet she did it anyway, And I have a tendency to want to be generous with everybody and just assume that, they got into things very innocently and with all the best of intentions. But she had to know that this was going to come crashing down on her. She had to. There was no, man, it's a rough spot. So, So anyway, I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about her in particular, though. My whole point is, and again, I'm following news on this, but, you know, it's mostly through Twitter and Facebook and online links, and I'm not as tied into it as I could be. But, I mean, since this happened, do we have a whole slew of other quote-unquote transracial people coming out of the woodwork who wish they could actually be black, not just, you know, because, look, we've got lots of people of varying skin tones and, you know, genetic ethnicities or whatever, and I don't even know if that's a correct term, but we've got people of various colors and ethnicities growing up all around the world who are growing up in cultures that don't match, you know what I'm saying? There are plenty of white people I've met who've grown up in black neighborhoods or gone, you know, my cousin Rob went to an all-black school for a long time, and he was, in his speech patterns and a lot of the cultural things that he did, very black. I mean, he's way whiter than I am. I mean, you don't get any whiter than Rob is. But he grew up with a lot of black culture, and he has, in his daily life, adopted a lot of elements of that, identifies with a lot of elements of that, is not in any way claiming to be black, but I also don't think there's anything, you know, poser about him or anything fake about him. That's just how he grew up, and that's where he came from. And he doesn't pretend to be anything he's not. But, you know, is his identifying with black culture because of how he grew up, is there anything wrong with that? No. And so we've got lots of people who, you know, or people who have been adopted and have grown up, you know, in black kids or Chinese kids or Korean kids who have been adopted by white families and have grown up in white middle-class America and been very stereotypically, you know, white bred kids. Is there anything wrong with that? That the cultural expectations of their skin tone don't match their upbringing? No, there's nothing wrong with that. It happens. But since Rachel Dolezal, do we have any people coming out of the woodwork claiming that they actually, you know, in their soul, they think they were born black and they really feel like they should be allowed to identify as black and be able to fill that out on the forums, or, you know, that I should be able to identify as Native American and I should get all the benefits that go along with that, because, which, by the way, not saying that being able to identify as Native American is somehow some, you know, benefit bonanza and, you know, some picnic for life. But the idea that should I be able to, you know, if I grew up in a town that was predominantly Native American and I went to a predominantly Native American school all of my life, even though I'm white and I've been, you know, my family's been white for generations, if I grew up in that setting, should I suddenly be allowed to claim that, well, yeah, but culturally I've grown up exactly the same as these kids. I should be able to claim the same rights and benefits that they get as, you know, for their minority status. Shouldn't I be able to get that? You know, shouldn't I be able to be C. Thomas Howell and Soul Man and claim these minority scholarships because, well, that's how I grew up. I mean, yeah, I may be white, but I still identify as black. So shouldn't I? Are we getting a whole slew of people coming out and claiming this? Are we getting a whole bunch of people? No. No, we're not. At least not that I've seen. All right. Maybe they're out there. Maybe I've just missed those news stories. Again, I'm not as connected as I could be. Set me straight if I'm wrong on this. But I don't think that the sense of transracial that the popular media was trying to use, comparing it to transgender, I just don't think that that's a thing. I don't think that's a huge issue that's out there. I think they're, you know, they've come up with this term transracial to try and make their points about this case and try and turn it into something even larger. God, did you guys hear the doorbell, the knocking? I'm building to something here and suddenly interrupted by the neighbor kid wanting to play with Noah. Where was I? I was building to something. You guys get where I was going. But the idea is that the media wants to make points about this. And so, again, cutesy term, they use transracial. But it's just one woman. And it's just one woman who got herself into a very bad situation. And she lied and is pathological about it. I mean, the corner she's painted herself into and the denials she's making and the obvious fabrications going on, this is one disturbed woman, one person. You can't go stealing the term transracial to apply to that. And you certainly also can't make out this one woman to be indicative of some larger, some larger issue or some, you know, if people want to make, because it's always, look, she's a ludicrous case. She's a silly person in a silly situation, and people want to try and point out something about it that, I mean, you know, conservatives want you to say that, see, we've gotten culturally equal enough that our race issues are so smoothed over that it's advantageous to be black now. That, oh yeah, racism's got to be over because look, we've got people wanting to be black. We've got, you can't use this to make some larger point. You can't dig into that. This is, anyway, now I lost my head of steam, which is probably good. Now I can use that as an excuse for why I have no point. I always end these things by saying, I have no real point. This time I'll pretend it's not really my fault. Although the other interesting thing in this conversation, as I was talking to Daniel about it, he mentioned something about race itself being purely a social construct. And in my thoughts, it kind of shook me a little bit because I've just always made this assumption that, you know, race, there's genetics about it. I mean, you know, genetically, we can trace back, and it's really popular now to go get your DNA tested and find out where your racial heritage comes from. Genetically, you know, where did your descendants come from? What parts of the earth? And to find out that you're 8% sub-Saharan African and, you know, 59% Eastern European and, you know, whatever else, and however the balance works out. And so there's a very strong link in my mind that says that race is this genetic thing. Although, I mean, again, technically, we're all one species, we're all one people. And there's been so much mixing over the years that, yeah, really, I mean, you know, you can say that there's things about appearance or that there's things about skin tone and physiological features and all this. But honestly, I mean, you know, if you've got a person who, you know, regardless of skin tone and appearance, you've got a person who is, let's say a quarter black. All right. However we're defining all this. Let's say they're a quarter black and they identify as a black person. Anyone going to question that? And we're going to stop them and say, yeah, you're not real black. Come on, you're only a quarter black. That doesn't count. All right. But that's up to them. That's up to them and their upbringing and how they feel it's appropriate to identify themselves. But what if you have the exact same person who is a quarter black who, because of where they grew up, they're like, well, yeah, and you know, my grandfather was black. Yeah, I'm a quarter black, but I don't really, you know, that's not core to their identity. I mean, they're just, you know, if they choose not to identify themselves as black, do you feel like they're doing something wrong? If if their skin tone, if their appearance, if their cultural upbringing, if whatever else about them, if they identify as white, even though, well, yeah, but technically you're a quarter black. I mean, is there any reason to bring that up? Is there any, it's a social construct. It is not just what you yourself bring to it as, and my brother was trying to make a point to me about the difference between race, which is a social construct, and identity, which is what you create for yourself. But I mean, honestly, who's to really? We can come up with the genetics of it, and we can say that yes, your ancestors came from here, here, and here. But the stuff that society puts on you is really based on a bunch of superficial stuff. And again, man, I have a deeper point to make somewhere, and I'm just not. All of this just leads me to more questions. This is, again, one of those topics, as I've been, you guys have seen me do this, I'm floundering, and I'm trying to find some understanding in all of these issues, whether I'm talking about, gender issues and sexuality issues and now race issues and the other stuff, women's rights, feminism, all the stuff that I've been covering over the last, I don't know what, 20 episodes, I keep coming back to stuff like this. All of it is because I grew up with a set of assumptions and, you know, my opinions have changed over the years and I've always felt that I'm a progressive person. I've always felt that I am, you know, I'm understanding and accepting and open. And just in the last year, I have discovered that while I am a progressive person and I want to be a progressive person, I realize I don't know crap about crap. All of these topics go so deep, and because there's people that spend lots and lots of time dealing with them and suffering with them and analyzing them. And I realized that I don't understand anything about what's going on. And that's the same thing I'm coming to with the ideas of race and culture, ethnicity. I don't know what labels are even appropriate to put on stuff, but it's driving me to realize that I don't understand race issues in this country, in this world. I don't understand where everybody is coming from. It's all very, it seems weird to say it's all new to me, but again, I've just sat here on these same base assumptions for, you know, a long time. And yeah, like I say, they evolve over time, but still, the core of it really hasn't changed a whole lot. And now I'm realizing that, yeah, you know what, there's a lot more to it than I know. And so I guess if I'm going to make a point here, out of all of this rambling, if you're going to take anything out of this, it is do some research. Read, pay attention, and listen to people. Because there are lots of people out there who know way more than you do, way more than I do. And there's also people who think they know way more than we do and yet don't. And listen to them, too. I mean, honestly, just listen to the experiences of people that are out there, because I'm amazed at how much I don't know. I'm amazed at how much I can learn out of this. So that's my takeaway from this, is listen, pay attention. You know what? Done. You know what's up next? Roku! And I'm only going to do this one really quick, because actually it shouldn't even be Roku. It should be its own new segment, but I'm not going to do that yet. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Movie of the Week, which is actually only going to be every other week, but it's still the Nerd Pride Radio Movie of the Week. That's the official name of it. This is my brother's idea, my other brother, Kyle. This is my brother's idea, and it was brilliant, and I thank him for it, and I'm really enjoying it so far. We've done a whole one movie. But the idea is we're just going to make a movie reviewing club that whoever wants to sign up for it can sign up for it. We'll take turns picking the movie that we're going to watch. And the idea is you want to pick something that either you haven't seen in a long time or that you haven't seen at all. That would even be better. That's the one I'm hoping for. So I'm hoping people just start picking movies they've never seen. There's a problem with that, but I'll get to it in a minute. And then everybody, and it has to be something that's streaming on Netflix. So then we have 2 weeks. He announces it on a Sunday night. We have 2 weeks for everybody to get around and actually watch whatever the movie of the week is. And at the end of 2 weeks, we have no discussion whatsoever until the end of the 2 weeks, and then my brother will put up a discussion thread for it, and then we all go out and we talk about how we felt about it. And so, like I say, I'm really hoping that people just start picking movies that they haven't seen, that they would like to, and that they think everyone's going to enjoy, but we don't know for sure. All right. Right now, I picked 13 Assassins for the first movie. That's the one we all just watched, and we've been talking about a little bit. Just opened up today. And we've been talking about a little bit, good discussion, interesting movie. And 13 Assassins is a movie that I saw 3 years ago. If you guys have been longtime listeners to the podcast, I talked about 13 Assassins in episode 20. So that was 3.5 years ago, January. I just happened to be looking it up this morning because I was making commentary on the thread. And it's a movie that I really liked when I first saw it. I really liked it again when I watched it the second time. But I went out and I picked a movie I had already seen before, but it was one that was a while ago, and it was kind of, I knew I liked it, but it was kind of dim in my memory, and I couldn't remember all the reasons I liked it. So it was a good one to watch again and refresh myself on, and then we could talk about. But again, I picked a movie I had seen already because I felt this pressure that, well, it's the movie of the week. I don't want to pick a crappy movie. What if I pick something that I'm really excited about, and then it turns out we all hate it? Oh, that would be terrible. I better pick one that I know I'm safe with. And I had a list of, you know, a good half dozen safe movies that I knew would work out pretty well. But I'm hoping that we get past that and we get to the point where, you know what? If I pick a crappy movie, I pick a crappy movie. I'm doing it in good faith. I'm picking something I think we're all going to like. If it turns out we don't, then hopefully we get really good discussion out of that too. I would love, or even better yet, wouldn't it be awesome to pick a movie that half of us like and half of us don't? See, then we can have real discussions about it. Right now, I picked, again, what I thought was a pretty safe movie that's interesting. I don't think most people have seen it, but I knew that I liked it. And we're all coming out with fairly similar opinions. I mean, this is a movie that Roger Ebert, because I did research after I watched it, Roger Ebert raved about this being one of the best action movies of all times, and that once I watched it and went out and did the research, I'm like, oh yeah, Rotten Tomatoes has got like 90-something percent approval rating. Oh yeah, it's definitely a good movie. So maybe later we'll get to some movies that are a little more risky, a little more out there. But again, I just had my pick, so my next chance to do this is going to be, I don't know, how many people are signed up for? 8? You know, my next pick isn't going to be for another, like, 4 months. So, but we'll see how people do. I mean, again, your first time through, I'm sure everybody's going to want to pick something that they're that they've seen before. They're pretty sure it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, but anyway, it's the Nerd Pride movie of the week. Feel free to come by. I'm going to try and start announcing these. Oh yeah, in fact, if you guys want to watch the next movie, it's going to be what is it? The Year of the Condor, the Flight of the Navigator. It's not Flight of the Navigator. I'm making a joke there. It is. I think it's. I can't remember. It's an old Robert Redford movie. That's all I know is that Robert Redford's in it, and it was 1975. Other than that, I am not going to watch any more of the, or read anything else about it. I'm not going to look up anything about it. I don't want to know anything until I actually watch the movie. 3 Days of the Condor. Oh, I was so close. 3 Days of the Condor, 1975, and Robert Redford. That's all I know about it. So if you guys want to watch, you don't have to sign up for the Movie of the Week group if you don't want to, although you can. But if you want to watch 3 Days of the Condor before the next one, and you even want to come in and just, again, you don't have to sign up, you don't have to participate, but if you want to watch the movie and even just come in and just read our commentary, we're going to have everyone posting up their reviews of it and talking about it and hopefully nitpicking it and getting down to the gritty detail of it, so which is what we're starting to do with 13 Assassins this week. If you've seen 13 Assassins, come check out the thread. So, you know, again, you don't have to sign up. You don't have to participate yourself. But if you just want to follow along, you're certainly welcome to do that. I am probably not going to make a huge deal out of it on the podcast here. I'm not going to do reviews of them here because I think that's what the discussion threads are for. But I will, when I think of it, I will mention when it's coming up what movies we're watching if you guys want to pitch in. This is your open invitation. Come join us. So, anyway, that's it for Roku. Now I've clipped over to the internet, so I've lost all my notes. Again, let's see where they are. Here we are. It's the Unnamed History segment.
Don't know much about history.
Yeah, I don't know how much detail I'm going to go into with the Unnamed History segment today, but on Memorial Day this year, it was Eli's birthday. We were in Texas. We were having a zombie-themed birthday party. And as we were talking about zombies, my dad and I mentioned a point that I picked up on the internet somewhere, and it's always stuck in my head, the idea that you know what people need during a zombie apocalypse, and you never see anybody using it, or any apocalypse, really? It's bicycles. Why the hell aren't people using bicycles everywhere during the apocalypse? I mean, I know, Mad Max style, you can certainly, you know, go out there. But eventually, the cars are going to break down and no one's going to know how to repair them. And we're going to run out of gasoline and we're not going to have this convenient Mad Max setup of people creating gasoline for us and people creating bullets for us. And people, no, eventually, this production stuff is all going to just fade out until we can rebuild civilization again. So once the motor vehicles are gone, and again, don't forget, motor vehicles, gasoline goes bad. All right, your gasoline sitting, you know, you've got these visions of the post-apocalypse where people are going around from gas station and siphoning off whatever they can get out of the tanks, going around to vehicles and siphoning out more gas for their stuff. You know what? Once you're about 2 years in, most of that's not going to work for you anymore. Most of it's going to have gone bad. It's going to have gotten moisture in it. It's going to have oxidized. It's going to have, it's just not going to work. But bicycles hold up really well. And after the apocalypse, whether it's a zombie apocalypse or whatever, after the apocalypse, there's bikes friggin' everywhere. You can find bikes in every single garage. This one's broken, but you know what? That one over there, just fine. You'll always be able to find a working bike, and off you go. And especially with zombies, I can outrun zombies on a bike. It's quiet. All right, it's not making any noise to attract zombies. It's highly maneuverable to get around all those wrecks in the road. If worse comes to worse and I have to, you know, hike across a stream or, you know, crawl over the wreckage, I can strap it to my back and carry it with me. All right, I've got my bike. That's awesome. All right, so I'm talking to my dad about how awesome bikes would be during the apocalypse. And my dad says, oh, you mean like the bicycle blitzkrieg? Because my dad knows everything. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. He says, oh, this is great. And he starts telling me the story about how during World War II, Japan is invading Singapore. That's what they wanted. They wanted Singapore. But Singapore is, they've got naval protection from the Allies that is nearly impenetrable. All right. Coming into Singapore by sea was just not an option for the Japanese at the time. And going overland is, that is some rough terrain coming down the peninsula to get to Singapore. And so therefore, the Allies felt very, very comfortable in Singapore. They felt pretty safe down there. And so what did the Japanese do? They sent a whole army of soldiers down on bicycle down the peninsula. Because, holy crap, bicycles, you can make good time, you can carry a decent amount of stuff, and if worse comes to worse, you strap them to your back, you hike them through the marshes for a little bit, and then boom, we're back on the road and off we go. All right, you need to go around obstacles, you need to do whatever. And holy crap, if the bicycle blitzkrieg, the Japanese, if they didn't take Singapore because they did it on bicycle in World War II. I mean, this is, you know, I don't have the exact year, but, you know, this is somewhere around 1940, 1942. And here come the Japanese on bikes to take over. And the more research I did about it, and this is a forgotten bit of history, at least forgotten because I've never heard of it before right now, is we had a good, you know, 100 years where armies all had bicycle corps. I mean, yes, you know, because we've had foot soldiers and we've had cavalry and we've had, you know, people who push around the heavy artillery, horse-drawn cannons, you know, to pull them around and get them into position. Before there were motor vehicles, that's how people got around. We had foot and we had horses and we had other draft animals. But once bicycles were invented, bicycles were part of just about every military. Everybody had. They had this really cool set of pictures of the Bersaglieri, which Bersaglieri is, I think, Italian for just light infantry. And the Italian light infantry soldiers, it shows them going through the mountains in northern Italy. And they have specifically invented for this purpose folding bikes, military folding bikes that they can just, you know, fold up so the two wheels go together and you lock it all in place and it just slips right onto your backpack and you can hike it wherever you need it. And then boom, you got road again, you break out your bike and go. And it's just cool. I mean, that's 1886. They invented folding bikes that could be used for this purpose. That is crazy. I saw a bit with, and I can't remember what context or where they were. All I wrote down was Buffalo soldiers, but Buffalo soldiers being black, African American, army infantry in the United States. And apparently the Buffalo soldiers had a bicycle corps. All right. A bunch of black army dudes on bicycles. That's awesome. I mean, this picture in my mind is fantastic. I love the idea of bicycle soldiers. And while I was at it, by the way, Buffalo soldiers, which, not just because of the song, but the term Buffalo soldier, it's just always been a term that I have found fascinating. I think it's cool. Badass Buffalo soldier. That just sounds great. And this article I was reading about the Buffalo soldiers gave a little link. And why were they called Buffalo soldiers? Supposedly because Native Americans, on first meeting black people, and in fact, in particular, these black soldiers, felt that the Afro hairstyle, the tight, curly, African hair, they felt that felt like, or looked like, resembled the hair on the back of a buffalo, that tight, curly black hair, because you got that black mat of hair on top of a buffalo. And so they felt that these soldiers, these men, had that same kind of hair. And so therefore, Buffalo soldiers. I don't know if that's true or not. That was what Wikipedia was telling me, and I believe that said supposedly. So take it with a grain of salt, but that makes sense to me. And it's really cool, Buffalo soldier. I love that term. But anyway, the idea is, in history, yeah, you know what? When you don't have other technology, when cars haven't been invented yet, or at least they're not affordable and reliable, then, you know, or when you don't have the the entire nation covered with paved roads yet, et cetera, in rough conditions. Bicycle is awesome, all right? And that's what we can learn looking at history is that, yeah, you know what? When bicycle was the pinnacle of transportation technology for individuals, then yes, of course the military made use of it. Of course people, you know, used bicycles wherever they could because it was the most efficient way of getting around. And then, you know, vehicles, motor vehicles superseded that and they've gone the way of the horse and buggy. But you know, they had their day. And so therefore, hey, come the apocalypse, whether it's The Stand or The Walking Dead or whatever apocalypse you're going to choose, come the apocalypse. When the motor vehicles all fail on us, guess what? We're going to turn back to bikes because we can use them and they're efficient and they don't run out of gas. There will, no matter how bad the apocalypse is, you're still going to be able to find people who can repair a bike. You may not be able to find people who can manufacture parts from scratch to repair that car, but you can certainly find people who can put a bike together. I mean, hell, with a little bit of practice, I could figure out how bikes work. Right? I mean, the mechanics of a bike, I understand those in general principle right off the top of my head. And, you know, you give me a little bit of time, I could work on putting bikes together. I could work on figuring that out. Could I do the same thing for a car? Not modern cars. Certainly not. Maybe, given enough time and a mentor to help me, maybe with the early vehicles. But yeah, no, see, that's all beyond me. But my little community will certainly have bicycle repairmen. We can do that. So anyway, bikes are awesome. Don't forget it. All right, but that's the short segment. The next bit is, where is it? Oh, man, do I want to go into it? I mean, I do want to go into it, but do I want to go into it? Let's do it. Uh-oh, get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. Okay. My nerd rage this week didn't start as a rage. It just started as me being scared. All right, but then it built into a rage. And the idea is what I was scared of was the fear of online retaliation. All right. Now, this came about because of Mad Max Fury Road. Which is an awesome movie, by the way. If you haven't seen Mad Max Fury Road, what the hell is wrong with you? Go see it. Good Lord, people. I can't believe you're wasting time here. Don't listen to me. Mad Max Fury Road is way better than this podcast. And besides, I'll be here later. Mad Max is going to leave the theater soon. You better hurry. All right. But anyway, Mad Max Fury Road came out. And before I even got to see it, I got to see some of the online controversy about it, the men's rights groups claiming that it was feminist propaganda. And so on my website, my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, I put up a post about that and said, you know, Mad Max Fury Road is feminist propaganda. And then I had a whole discussion about how these idiots are making such a big deal about, I mean, look, again, this is not why I'm here. I'm not here about talking about feminism and about these idiot men's rights groups or any of that stuff, because we've all heard that. But really, honestly, let me just say that if you're worried that Charlize Theron is taking over this movie and that you're upset that there's a movie featuring a strong black hero, or strong black, God, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm still stuck on the Rachel Dolezal conversation from before. A movie featuring a strong female hero. By the way, a strong female amputee hero, by the way. I keep forgetting because, I mean, they played it off, the fact that she's got one arm, they played it off very realistically in the movie that the adaptive arms that she has are not terribly complex and they're not, you know, it's not this huge sci-fi thing. They're very realistic in their construction and their use. And they did it so well that I keep forgetting that she only had one arm. I keep forgetting that she's an amputee. So when I did my review a couple weeks ago, when I went on and on and on and on and on about how much I love this movie, and I do, I love this movie, never even brought it up because, oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. She's also an amputee. How about that? Huh. Weird. But I read some article about a woman who is also an amputee, and she's a stunt woman, and actress, although her roles are limited, but she says she gets lots of zombie roles because, you know what? There's lots of roles for zombies that only have one arm. That's pretty cool when they can just do that with some makeup and they don't have to bother with CGI-ing your arm out. And she said for her, watching Charlize Theron kick ass with only one arm, like there's one point where she's removed the prosthetic and she is whipping ass with just one arm. She said, oh my God, she cheered. She about cried. It was one of the most moving, powerful experiences in cinema for her ever. And I'm like, wow, yeah, you're right. There's never been a role like that for people to identify with. Holy crap. All right, anyway, that's not the point. The point is, look, if you're upset that this movie is all about a strong woman, and you're so upset that this really should have been Mad Max's movie and that it really should have been about a guy kicking ass, let me refer you to every other action movie ever created, and then you can go watch guys kicking ass all you want. All right, this is one movie. I mean, how many female ass kicking movies do we get compared to how many men ass kicking movies we get? Yeah, exactly. Even though they're half the population, they don't even get a sliver of a fair share of the movie roles. So just shut your mouth. But here's the point: it wasn't about that. It was. When I had the discussion on my boards and I talked about how stupid these guys were for making this out to be some sort of feminist propaganda issue, I put a link to the original guy's article. I put a link to his website and his article. And I almost didn't. And this is the part that gets me. This is the core of what I'm bringing up here. Is it passed through my mind that, okay, if I put a link to this guy's site, and I only have, you know, a few dozen people that visit my forums regularly, but let's say, you know, a dozen or so people from my website follow that link to his website to read that stupid article, because it was very illustrative. It was very clearly highlighted the absurdity of their point. And so therefore, it was worth reading to see what it is that they're actually trying to claim. And I thought to myself, okay, if I have a dozen people or more from my site who follow that link, this guy will know who I am. This guy who runs his crazy website where he encourages people to go out and intentionally troll feminists, intentionally destroy people's lives, this is what the guy does. So let's say he notices my link. He notices the fact that, hey, where are all these people coming from Nerd Pride? Pride, that sounds gay to me. So he would then come out, find my site, and all he has to do is make one reference to yeah, look at these pansies over here. Look at these candy asses trying to chat, blah, blah, blah. And then it would just take a couple of trolls to come over and destroy my site. And they could do it. All right, because I'm not terribly technically proficient. I mean, yeah, I know I'm a computer geek. I know I'm a nerd. I know that computers are what I do for a living, but website programming is not my forte. That's not what I do. I could barely keep my forums running as it is. You guys are lucky I can post these podcasts up on time or at all. All right. So if someone came over and wanted to try and hack my website, or not even hack it, just destroy it, just come in and post crap that would bring it down, they could probably do it. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like I'm some security genius here. And I'm sorry I'm giving away my secrets here, but most websites out there are probably pretty easily hacked or sabotaged is the word I'm really looking for. And so I almost didn't put a link to his article simply because, oh, that's kind of a risk. All right. And it's a minor risk. All right. This is a guy who, look, I picked up this link, I picked it up from a much larger news website who linked directly to it. And so therefore, he's got to be getting tons of traffic from hundreds of sites. They're all linking to him because of this one article that they're all, you know, all sorts of people are having the same discussion and doing exactly the same thing that I did. And the idea that he would notice me and that he would come over and pick on a website the size of mine that really, by the way, is not even about feminism. It's not even about, we just happen to tangentially be discussing what, you know, something related to him. The idea that they would come over and pay any attention to us at all is silly. All right. The risk is minimal. But even if it weren't minimal, it pisses me off that I have to be scared of that. it pisses me off that I have to even consider that because it is so easy to destroy. It is so easy to tear down. It's so easy to break stuff. And I'm a white middle-aged dude running a nerd website about gaming and bullshit. I mean, I got nothing here. All right. I'm not the threat to them, and I'm not the target. And yet it scared me. It scared me enough that I hesitated to speak up. It scared me enough that I hesitated to say something. And I ultimately decided, well, of course I'm going to say something. I can't let that be my consideration, but it's not as easy or as blasé as that. I mean, it's something you have to actually think about. Do I want to put myself at risk? And again, in my case, absolutely minor risk, minuscule risk, but I had to consider it. Do I want to put myself at that risk? All right. Now, taking that into account, there are people out there risking way more than I am all the time. All right. And it is mostly women. And I'm just speaking in terms of feminism right here. I mean, if you wanted to take this to the area of race discussion or transgender discussion or sexuality discussion or any other oppressed minorities, these are people who risk way more than I do by speaking out. All right. Because you can look at, Anita Sarkeesian, Brianna Wu. These are people who are front and center on this Gamergate crap and front and center on the headlines about it. And they have been viciously attacked. Viciously. I just read an article on, and I don't think I have the woman's name here. Oh, I wish I could give her proper credit for this. But she is a grad student doing research on gender issues in gaming, and specifically about the culture of discrimination within gaming culture. That's what she's looking at. And she's trying to do a doctoral dissertation on this. And with just a little bit of looking, she can go out and find where she has proposed that she's going to write her doctoral dissertation on issues relating to Gamergate, feminism, discrimination in gaming. And she can go out and find on 4chan and Reddit and other places, she can find gators out there who are already plotting how to destroy her. I mean, like, quite literally talking about how, all right, step one, we need someone to go out and buy up her name in websites. We need to get domains that have her name in them, and we need to start setting up sites that tear her down, and we need to put up websites so that as soon as someone does a Google search for her, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to find us, all right? And then that way, we can make sure that she can never get hired anywhere in her life. Oh, yeah, and while we're at it, let's also make sure that we're all putting, we've got people who are putting in complaints to her college advisor and says, oh, yeah, by the way, here's her name, here's her address, here's her phone number, here is all of her social media links on the web to find her. Oh, yeah, here's her doctoral advisor at her college. Here's the name of the person that you need to contact if you want to start registering complaints about her. Every event that she appears at, let's make sure that we register complaints. Let's make sure that we, like this organized plan. And now, how much do the trolls follow through on it? How much of it is them just trying to be intimidating? How much? I don't know. But holy crap. She's doing research to write an article about the issue, and within a couple of months, there's already detailed blueprints for how to destroy her. Like not just to argue with her or discredit her research or prove that she's wrong about something. No, it is all very specifically, very Scientology-style L. Ron Hubbard attacks of, no, if you destroy them personally, then the threat is gone. And that's just scary. All right. I'm just worried that, oh, yeah, but what if they come over and troll my website? Oh, do I really want to put this up if they might come troll me? Oh, I don't know if I want to put up with that. All right. And these are people who are making a choice to stand up for something knowing that they could be a target to have literally their life ruined. All right. Not just the death threats and the rape threats and the other bullshit that goes along with this every frickin' time. But yeah, the releasing, what do they call it, doxing, where you release their personal information, their phone number and their address, and threats about, well, somebody should really pay her a visit and teach her a lesson, you know, things like that. I mean, these people feast. Oh, this is where my nerd rage comes in. I can't believe we have to deal with this in 2015. I can't believe that this minority, and they are a minority, a small, tiny vocal minority, but a tiny vocal minority who has learned the power of the internet and have learned that yeah, the internet can be used for lots of things. Lots of good things, lots of bad things, but they have found that, look, if you want to be destructive with the internet, if you just want to be flat out cruel and destructive, oh, that's easy. It's super easy. And they're willing to do it. And it's horrifying. We don't have a matching tool on the side of good to go out and, you know, sabotage people with rainbows and lightness. We don't have that. It's just frightening. And as much as I'm thrilled that the Supreme Court came down on the right side of marriage here recently, yay marriage. But the Supreme Court did, please tell me I wrote this down. Let's see. Yeah, okay. The Supreme Court ruled in a case just recently that threats over the internet don't count. There's nothing illegal about them at all unless you can show intent. All right? Did they intend to follow through on that? And if you can't show that there's intent, then there's nothing illegal about it. All right. Originally, the original rulings came down and said, you know, no, look. If these statements are made, if these threats are made, and it is clear that any reasonable person looking at those would understand that they're a threat, then yes, it's a threat and you need to be held accountable for it. And they're saying, no, just because any reasonable person would take them as a threat. Sorry, if he didn't intend them as a threat, no matter how much he should have known that people would take it that way, if he didn't mean it as a threat, then it's not illegal. All right, what does this mean in practical purposes? The very specific case that this is about involves a guy who started the process by saying, look, it is illegal online for me to say that I want to kill my wife, my ex-wife at this point. It's illegal for me to say that I want to kill my ex-wife, but it's not illegal for me to tell you that it's illegal to say that, so that's what I'm doing. It is illegal for me to tell you how much I want to kill my ex-wife, right? And so, okay, that's pretty much an open threat. But okay. Maybe he meant it as a joke. It was, in fact, he claimed that it was a joke that they had gotten from some sketch TV show they used to watch where, oh, it's illegal for me to say this, but it's not illegal for me to tell you it's illegal. All right. So, okay. Maybe it was a joke, but she wound up getting a restraining order based on this and other, I mean, there's extensive threats. That's the gist of the first one, but there's lots of threats that went along with it. And so then she wound up getting a restraining order against him. Well, he's now styled himself as a rapper. And in his rap persona, he writes a rap that I don't know if he ever performed it, but he published his lyrics on his Facebook page, where he puts out his lyrics, and in it he describes the whole process and then says, these are actual lyrics that he wrote down, puts on the internet for her, and says, take that restraining order and fold it up tight. Is it thick enough to stop a bullet? Okay. That's the threats he's making. And it just keeps going and going and going. I mean, to the point where he talks about someone, again, you know, he's couching all of this in terms of, oh, this is just, you know, I'm just making jokes here, or this is my rap persona. This is not really me. This is just a persona I'm putting on. And it's therapeutic for me to work all of this out through these lyrics, even though I'm mentioning her by name and I'm directing it at her online. You know, it's, hold on a second, cough button. I mean, this is not just, these are not just things that are being taken as threats. There we go. Before I had the cough, talked about within the context of his persona, talked about attacking her home and giving the address of it and showing a layout of the house for, you know, anyone who might want to help me out on this. Talked about attacking her in the workplace. It was egregious. It was bad. All right. And after all of this, and it goes to the highest court in the land, and the highest court in the land says, yeah, no, sorry, he's innocent, because you can't show that he intended that to be a threat. What? Yeah, sorry. And to my mind, I'm listening to it going, wait, they have to read his mind? How do you prove that it was intent? How? I mean, I really like the standard of, hey, any unreasonable person knows that that's a threat. It's clearly a threat. He's clearly trying to intimidate her and bully her and threaten her. He wants to scare her, terrorize her, drive her out. All right. And yet the Supreme Court says, nope, nothing illegal about that. He can keep doing that. That is just fine. All right. And so I'm outraged. I'm just outraged by this again, that we live in a world where you're allowed to do that. But now here's the next part of this that really bugs me with the Supreme Court, is that the decision to let this guy go, the decision to say it's okay for this guy to make these statements because we can't prove they were threats, that decision was 8-1. 8-1. Meaning, look, the only holdout, the only one who wanted to say this guy should be convicted was Clarence Thomas. Do I want to be on Clarence Thomas's side? This is a close one. The idea that all of these other judges, some of whom I respect and admire, some of whom their decisions I've agreed with pretty across the board most of the time, they all are on the same side of this, saying, no, sorry, you got to let this guy go. Sorry, those aren't threats. They're not prosecutable. So therefore, there is something more to this than I know. Which is too bad, because, oh, I want to be outraged about this. I don't want to be on Clarence Thomas's side on this. I know, at least, look, there's been things where I'm on Clarence Thomas's side, but not where he's the one holdout. There's got to be something wrong with this. So clearly, I don't understand the intricacies of the whole thing, but man, it still makes my blood boil. That's my nerd rage. But finally, and I am sorry, this has been kind of a heavy podcast. So I feel bad about that. Hopefully we can lighten it up when we get to the Pod-O-Matic. Holy blueberries, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Whew, got through all of that. And our number is 45. 45 today is from... Let me get to it. Humongous! All right. Humongous says, do you like the old school games that have the GM book, player book, and adventure all separate in a cool box? Or do you like it all in one book, like the newer games? I prefer it to be all online and free. But since you're making me pick, oh man, I don't know. I like, for example, Pathfinder. Yes, you need a monster book for Pathfinder. But Pathfinder in general, everything's in the core rulebook. You got one book that gives you everything you need to start playing. And yes, it'd be nice to have the monsters as well, so you don't just have to have all, you know, PC versus NPC fighting. But it's all in one book, and I like that. I like having all the references in one place, so that when I go flipping through the book, I know it's all here somewhere. As opposed to in old school D&D, having to go, okay, I need rules for movement. Well, they give me the basics of it in the player guide, but, oh, if I want details of moving over different terrains, oh, that's in the GM's guide, the DM's guide, in fact. I miss that for nostalgia reasons. But in reality, I much prefer one book. I much prefer having everything together. Although, now some books go so far as to put player information, game master information, and then, oh yeah, here's the adventure in the back of the book. And I get that, look, for a lot of games, it's helpful, it's useful, it helps you get people into the game and move product. If you have a starting adventure already included so that they can just get going, people like that. That way they don't have to go buy something else, or they don't have to make up all their own stuff right away. They can just start playing and find out how it works. That's kind of cool. I like having the adventures separate. And the only exception I would make to the I prefer all in one book is Paranoia. I would much prefer a Paranoia setup where I can hand the players a handbook and say, here's everything you're allowed to know. And it's almost nothing. They get 8 pages of material. That's all they get. And then everything else is just for me, baby. I like that. Because I like fostering that sort of paranoia. I like fostering that sort of me versus them mentality. It's the only game where I can do that. And actually, technically, it's them versus them. And they all know I'm to blame. They all know that I'm the one setting them up. They all know that I'm the one who's out to get them. And yet, they still, once you get into it and you're into your character, they keep forgetting to blame me until it's all over. And they just blame each other. That's the best. Paranoia is wonderful for that. But yeah, in general, one rule book is way better for me. I like having it all in one place and not having to wonder about what book I'm going to. And that's why for a game like Pathfinder, now that it's gotten so big, I mean, it's like any version of Dungeons and Dragons in the past. You know, I've got dozens and dozens of books, and I buy them. I buy them all. All right. And the player book, or the, not player book, the character books, like the NPC Codex and the Monster Codex that I have now, I like having those in separate books because I'm going to use them while I play, and I know that I want these characters or these people. But most of the other basic rules, if I'm just looking up a rule and how something works, I would much rather just go online. And even though I've bought all the books, I own them, I keep them sitting near me, I prefer to just go online and be able to look up the system reference document online and have all the rules available to me online. So I don't have to worry about what book is what. I can just click and go, yeah, this rule, and it will tell me where it is, and it just pulls it up for me. I really like that. I still like the books in my hand. I still buy them all. I support Paizo. I support my hobby. But, you know, all the stuff is available for free if you want it. So, I mean, again, it is one of the best models ever, the idea that you could, that they can give you almost everything they've got for free, and yet people still buy the books because they want to support the hobby. They like having the books in their hand. I think it's beautiful. Wonderful. Anyway, enough of that. 31. 31 is right here on the page, and it's from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, what is the last video you watched on YouTube? Oh, that is a tough one. Let me see. If I go to YouTube, will it give me some sort of reminder of where my head was at? Because I did watch Kung Fury recently. It's not the latest video that I've watched. But I did watch Kung Fury, which is unbelievable. Watch Kung Fury. Go out there. It's a half-hour video. It is a special effects company. Basically, I'm assuming that this is their resume. This is their portfolio. This Kung Fury is showing what it is that they can do as a special effects company. And yet, it's also a really cool send-up of 1980s action, and it's a lot of fun. Watch Kung Fury. So I've watched that recently, but I've also... My wife just showed me something this morning that was linked from Facebook, and we went to YouTube and watched... I can't remember what it was. I always watch John Oliver as soon as it comes out, but that's certainly not the most recent. You want to know my most frequently watched video? You didn't ask, but my most frequently watched video, and I'm sorry to say this, I can't help it, but Iggy Azalea, Murder Business. Oh, I love that video. Not the one with the little beauty pageant girls, but the one where it's Iggy Azalea, Murder Business, because it's right here, by the way. I pull up the YouTube page and says, do you want to watch it again? And it's right there at the head of the line. Iggy Azalea, Murder Business featuring T.I., the official studio something or other. So this is the studio version. And I don't know. I love that video. I love watching her sing. I love watching it. I'm not a huge Iggy Azalea fan, but I really like that video, and I can't tell you why. Something cool about it. So, anyway, I wish I could remember what the most recent one I watched is. Oh, I do know. I was in here just moments before I started recording, and I sat down with my kids for a second because they were watching a YouTube video, Jacksepticeye doing some gameplay stuff. And I don't even remember what game, but I remember seeing Jack's face on the screen. So that's the last thing. That's the last thing I watched. Oh, man, but I wish I could remember. But that's, again, I only came to that one incidentally. The last one I watched intentionally was whatever my wife showed me this morning. I wish I could remember what it was, but I can't. So, oh, well. 28. 28 comes from Ronster again. Ron, how do you think your life would be different if you had daughters? And then he adds on, I have three, and I am delighted with them all. Just so you know. Well, of course you are. I'm sure they're lovely and intelligent and tons of fun to be with. If I had had daughters, I don't know how much different my life would be. I mean, look, obviously different. Obviously significantly different. But, you know, in terms of who you raised them to be, you know, would I still be watching cheesy horror films with them? Would I still be sharing old cultural crap from the 80s and 90s with them? Would I still encourage them to play role-playing games with me? Yes, that's why I had kids, is so I'd have role-playing game players, because I ran out when I moved away. Jeez. You know, I'd still be encouraging them to play games with me. I'm sure I would still be watching them in band, and in speech, and doing drama stuff. And I'm sure it would be a lot of the same activities. It would just be girls instead of boys doing it. And how would that make my life different? It would have meant that for many, many years, it wouldn't be me having to take everyone to the bathroom every time we're in a public place. All right? It wouldn't have been me having to get up from the movie because I have to be the one to take them to the bathroom. It wouldn't have to be me ducking out of line at the amusement park or the zoo because, well, I've got to be the one to take him to the bathroom. That's would have been the major difference. Is that, yeah, Lisa can do all that crap. Ah, take that. But otherwise, I don't know. I'm not an expert on it. Talk to my brother. My brother has, 5 sons and 3 daughters, and his daughters are strong, intelligent, capable, nerdy, awesome girls. Just as his sons are incredible kids, and he has raised them all. Well, his wife does all the work. Again, I say my son raises, or my son, my brother. I say my brother raises them. Did I say brother right away, or did I say son? My language has been mixed up today. Anyway, my brother gets no credit. His wife does all the work, and he will tell you that himself. So, but they have brought up, in all seriousness, 8 really cool kids who are all interested in the same nerdy crap that my kids are interested in, that I'm interested in. They do all sorts of cool stuff, and they, I don't know. I don't think it would have been that. I mean, obviously, it would have been different. I can't say how. I'll let him address that and talk about what the difference is between sons and daughters in that kind of family. I don't know. I don't think it would have been that much different. It would have, but I don't know. It's all butterfly theory. It's, for me, it's the idea that, you know, if I had made a slightly different decision, you know, 10 years ago, if I had chosen to do X instead of Y one time, everything would be different. Everything. History doesn't smooth itself over. The fact that I changed that one thing, who knows what random factors that would have changed down the road that the next day, I wouldn't have happened to have seen this, or I wouldn't have happened to have done that, or it's the whole interconnected hand of fate thing. We went to, this weekend, we actually saw 2 concerts. We went to go see Joan Jett and Eddie Money perform for free in Omaha. Free concert in the park. All right, well, you can't pass up a free concert, so yeah. Hold on. Eli, one of those cookies is for you. You may have it. The other one's for Noah. So we went to go see our free concert in the park, and it was pretty cool. It was, I mean, again, not great, not the greatest concert I've ever been to, but it was a lot of fun. Joan Jett rocks out hard. Eddie Money, I knew all of his songs. Weird. And it was a day in the park with my wife, and we had a great time. And then last night, we went to go see a group called Snake Oil Sinners. And we went to see them because, again, it was free. Aiden works at the movie theater, and someone gave him free tickets to this concert. And so he's like, man, sure, what the hell, we'll go. And so me and Aiden and Lisa all went to go see Snake Oil Sinners last night. And they are a tribute band. They are a hair metal tribute band. They do nothing but hair metal songs from the 80s, but they come out dressed as each singer. So, you know, I mean, they had a guy decked out as Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. They had a Bret Michaels come out. They had a Freddie Mercury come out. They had, so they did all of their characters, and they performed, you know, three songs or so from each band that they were imitating. And they played for like 3 hours, three solid hours. They must have gone through 35 songs. It was crazy. And now the trick to this one, and again, you know, not the greatest concert I've ever been to in my life, but we had a lot of fun. And I think it's also the kind of thing that if I went with a bunch of people my own age and we all got drunk while we were doing it, it would have been even more fun. But the point of this is that my son got free tickets to go to this concert.
Hi.
You know, and by the way, he's now sitting over my shoulder here being creepy. Anyway, my son got free tickets to go to this concert. And because of that, we had to stop by the mall to pick up a ticket. And while we were in the mall, we just happened to pass by a store that we never go into anymore. It's because it's one of those that has it has really, really cheap clothes, but it has lots of turnover and, you know, lots of current fashion crap. But it's made for older women, and I don't mean like old women, but it's like not a teenager store. And so, there's Eli. And so we happened to pass by this store, and we saw a shirt in the front window, and my wife's like, wow, that is, you know what? I could wear that. Maybe, you know, I should go look at that. So we stopped in and we took a look, and we wound up, ultimately, she didn't buy that shirt, but while we were in there looking at it, she found a different top that was just cute. And she put it on, and it was really not her usual style, but once she put it on, it looked great on her. It was fantastic, and it was dirt cheap, and so we walked out with it. And, we paid for it. But anyway, we left, and she loved that shirt, and that's what she wore to the Joan Jett concert that night. And it was great. And the idea is, if Aiden hadn't have applied for the job at the movie theater, she never would have found that shirt. You know what I mean? It is the chain reaction of stuff. So it, which is not has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the original question. So I mean, look, if I had girls instead of boys, my whole life would be completely different just because of the sheer overwhelming number of tiny decision factors like that that would have led to a whole different set of experiences. But as far as in general, how would my kids have turned out, or how would my experience with my children be? I think it would be very similar, whether it's girls or boys. I think, you know, I'm still me, and I'd still be doing the same crap with them that I do with the boys. So, you know, anyway, I've spent way too long on this question. 30. Okay, well, at least the dice are turning, and they're not stuck, but how weird that I keep winding up in the same section. I haven't had to roll up or down yet. So 30, it's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, what are you most afraid of?
Me.
Okay, Aiden, lean in so they can hear you. What are you most afraid of?
Bridges.
Really?
Really.
Why?
I don't know. I can't go on bridges. They terrify me. That also includes bridges, docks, some ladders.
Okay, so when you say bridges and docks, you're talking about anything that has that space between the slats so you can see down below?
Anything that spans a space.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. All right. All right, see, he's obviously an idiot. His fears are unreasonable. Eli, what about you? What are you most afraid of in this world?
Well, used to be storms, but...
Yes, deathly afraid of storms, especially storms that come with tornadoes.
And hail.
And now he's much braver about it, but they still make him a little shaky. So, is there anything that scares you more than storms now?
Your face.
Okay. For me, I am hinky about heights, but more than anything, yeah, go ahead. Go. Do what you're going to do. But more than heights, it is, and I don't remember if I've answered this before or not, it's any situation that presents real danger to my kids that is not in my immediate control. It is just danger to my children just panics me, and especially if that danger involves heights. So combine heights with my children, and that is what scares me the most. All right. When I go climbing up to the top of an observation tower in a park, I'm totally fine with that. I mean, yeah, you know, I can look over the edge and I think about how high it is and it makes me a little nervous and all that. But, you know, it's a good kind of scared, but I'm not worried that I'm actually going to die.
What about that time when Mom held one of us over the edge of an observation tower?
Right, but exactly. But if you're going to hold a child over the edge, that's going to scare me. And when we say held over the edge, what we mean is like holding the baby in your arms and then you're just leaning out to look over the edge. And to my mind, it's like, it's a 3-story drop. It's not even that far. It's a 3-story drop. It's, oh God. And the same thing happened at the, at Mount Rushmore.
And the photo shoot.
Leaning over the edge of the railing there. Because it's the idea that, yeah, look, I know that you're not going to fall over the railing. I know that you're just fine. But look, when you're holding the baby here and you walk towards the rail, you're not even leaning over the edge. You're just standing next to the rail. The baby's center of gravity is above the railing. If he suddenly flails or tumbles, he's going to go right over the edge and die. Okay, so heights plus my kids, or heights plus any kids really, but heights plus my kids is probably the thing that scares me the most. Drives me absolutely crazy. Unless, what are you most afraid of? I mean, if you wanted to get existential and ask if I'm afraid of dying alone or afraid of, you know, old age or you know, losing my family or no, it's heights plus my kids. That's what scares me the most. I'm sorry about that door. Eli has no concept of recording.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, you. All right, hold on. We're going to do another one. All right, see, now I just complimented the dice on being so nice to me and they give me a repeat. It's number 30 again. Hold on. 54. Oh, it's just barely off the page. One square down. Oh, it's from my wife. My wife says, what is your favorite meme of all time? I don't even have to think about this one. It is the Walking Dead meme where Sheriff Rick tells dad jokes and he ends all of them by explaining the punchline and then using his son's name. So.
And then the son responds with, Mom's dead.
Yeah, and it's always stuff like that. You know, Carl comes up and says, "What? Wow, I could really go for a quesadilla.
A whole case, Carl?"
And he says, are you sure you're hungry enough for a whole case? Why not just have one dia? And then it pauses, and Carl says something tragic about how Mom's dead or whatever, and he leads and he goes, one dia, Carl! All right. See, that even makes my kids laugh. I love Sheriff Rick telling dad jokes to Carl. That meme breaks me up every time. I love it. I've seen probably dozens of them. I was going to say hundreds. I haven't seen that many. I've seen dozens and dozens and dozens of these things, and every single one of them, I love those jokes. 24. 24 takes us down to... God, it's from my wife again.
Wow, she is... Did you say one more last time?
Oh, no. I can keep saying one more until I say last one. And then we'll do one more after the last one, and then we'll actually be done.
Okay.
All right, just so you know how the process works.
I'm Aiden, and I'm really pedantic.
This is from my wife, and my wife says, oh, God, darn it! I forgot to do a listener betrayal today. Oh, shoot, guys, I am so sorry. I forgot the listener betrayal entirely. So I guess I'll have to do a couple extra Podomatics to make up for it. My wife Lisa says, what was your favorite childhood toy? And then in parentheses, she adds, you can't say your penis. Oh, darn it. There goes my favorite answer. Okay. My favorite childhood toy, Lego castle sets.
Oh.
The Lego castles, specifically, the best one was the first Lego castle I ever owned, which was the giant yellow one. This is before they made wall pieces for the bricks, because eventually castles got to where you would just have huge wall plates that you put in, these giant sections that are like, you know, five pegs wide and like seven blocks tall. That's cheating. You can put up a wall in no time with a whole bunch of those. No, this was a castle built entirely from individual bricks, built from the ground up, and it was in yellow. Why was it in yellow? Because they hadn't even gotten to the point where they started coloring the bricks to match the castles. All right, they didn't do them in all blacks and grays and really cool castle-y colors. No. Clearly, you can see looking at this set that they said, hey, let's make a castle. Based on the bricks that we have a lot of here, what color do you think would work best? Well, a red castle would be stupid. All right, we got a lot of yellow. Can we, yellow? What do you, or you think white? I don't know. White just doesn't work for me. Let's do the yellow. Clearly, that's what they did. Obviously, they had been planning a huge Egypt-themed pyramid set, and then they decided to just change it all over to castles. I don't know what happened, but it was yellow. I loved that set. But Legos of any sort. Legos were always my favorite toys. Other than my penis, obviously. 17 is from Billy Bob. What is your favorite place you have lived?
Right here with your kids.
Yeah, no, actually, that's actually true.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, my favorite place I've lived is Nebraska. I love living in the state of Nebraska. It is...
I have one for you.
I heard a theory once that the place that we're most tied to, the weather and the conditions and the living situation that we are most identify with for most people, is wherever you grew up as you were hitting puberty. Wherever you lived when you were, you know, at 11, 12, 13, 14, that is the key age that kind of locks in that's what home should look like to you. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's certainly true for me. I don't even remember where I heard it, but this is where I was when I was in 6th grade, 7th grade, and this is where I made my first really close group of friends, that knot of friends that are just, I don't know, the buddies that just hang out together, and it was, I don't know, it was a cool time. It was where I first learned to play Dungeons and Dragons. It's where I first, and so Nebraska has always been home for me. Yeah, even after we moved away, even after we did other stuff, I never wanted to leave again. So I stayed here for college. I met my lovely wife. We've lived here for our entire married life, and we have these wonderful children. And I really like Nebraska.
We're wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a first.
Yeah, I only say that because the podcast people are listening. If it was just us, I could go back to beating you like I normally do.
I was going to say, the moment the mic turns off, you savagely beat us.
But, now, if you want to take this question a slightly different way, I've told you guys about...
Can I say
yeah.
Your home in Texas, the three-storied, awesome...
It wasn't in Texas. It was in New York. And so,
sorry, I got confused.
No, but you're absolutely right. When I was just after that formative period I told you about, we moved back to New York, and we lived in the giant three-story house, the old Revolutionary War general housing. And when I say general housing, I mean housing for generals in the military. And huge three-story job with the servants' quarters on the third floor where me and my brother lived. Awesome. So anyway, that was the best house we ever lived in because the thing was gigantic. It's gigantic and complicated and just fun. But favorite place I've ever lived is here. And I've been, I don't remember living in, well, no, I do. I do. I was born in College Station, Texas. My dad went to A&M. So I was born in College Station, Texas, down near the Mexican border. I don't remember that house, but I do remember Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. I remember the house and the circle that we lived on there. And that was, you know, I don't know, I was two. And then there was a trailer park in Alabama and a little duplex house in California. And I remember both of those places, but both of them, strangely, I only remember for the trauma that happened in each one. in the trailer park in Alabama, I remember the trailer home because I vividly remember stepping on an anthill full of fire ants and having to sit in the sink screaming and crying while they tried to tend to my ant bite wounds. And it was horrible and traumatic, and I remember that very vividly. I also vaguely remember that my dad had a mustache at that time. Weird.
Oh, had a mustache?
Yeah, he had a mustache. It was weird. And then the house in California, I only remember, and I just put this together because I was talking about it with my dad. I'm like, wait a minute. When we were in California, did the house look like this? Were we sitting on a circle and we were over here? And he's like, yeah, that was the house. I'm like, okay, that's where it was. The only thing I remember about this is all the adults sitting out on the front yard in lawn chairs, and it'd be all the adults from the neighborhood. They'd all be sitting around just smoking and drinking and talking and, you know, having, you know, barbecues going, and they're all sitting around and all us kids are running around outside. And I just remember going up to ask adults questions, and twice it happened. I'd go up and ask them a question, and while I'm up there, I would accidentally bump into the cigarette that they're holding in their hands, and I would wind up burning my arm. That's all I remember is the trauma.
You were a clumsy kid.
Oh, it was terrible. But other than that, I mean, like I say, we lived in New York, and then we lived in Alabama again, and then Nebraska, New York, Nebraska, and then I never left Nebraska. So, yeah, Nebraska's my favorite place. I love it here. Awesome.
There's a lot of corn.
Yeah, and if you like corn, this is the place to be. 47. This is gonna be the last one for real. I'm not gonna do another one after. This is actually gonna be the real last one.
Unless you hit it instinctively.
This one comes from Zimny. Zimny Pod asks, your kids ask you to run a Hollow Earth style game in which their characters go spelunking in a cave and emerge into a strange and fantastical hidden world that few have ever seen. What would you populate it with? People, monsters, etc. It would be a mixture of fantasy style monsters, but ones that are either, you know, like Lost World holdovers of an ancient time, but maybe genetically created monstrosities, but then also some futuristic technology cyborg stuff. So it would be the kind of thing where we've got this Lost World dinosaur land, but then
cyborg dinosaurs
somewhere along the line, somewhere, you know, and probably 500 years ago, some ancient persecuted civilization, they were fleeing. You could even call them Atlanteans. It doesn't matter if it's Atlantis. It doesn't matter. But they were fleeing persecution, or they were running from something, or their civilization collapsed, and the stragglers, the lone survivors, took the tomes of their greatest technology at the time, and they escaped to this land, and this is where they hid out from whatever was going on up above. And so you've got this combination of Lost World dinosaurs plus some fairly advanced civilization that now, safe from the persecution above, they find some mystical energy resource down here that allows them to progress their technology exponentially, because now they've got unlimited energy. And they can do whatever they want. And it comes from some natural source within inside the Earth. And so now, you've got super advanced technology combined with dinosaurs. And now, your characters go falling into this world and they discover whatever this place is going to be called. That's what I would do with it. So, there you go. Alright, I guess that's it. I was about to hit it again. But we're done. We're really done. So I am going to go to my notes. And look at that, Aiden. Lost his guts at the last game. Oh, there it goes. All right, we got one more.
Number 37.
That's from Aiden. 37 says, oh, it's from Noah. Hey, Noah, who's not the only one not in the room right now. All right, Noah's question. Dad, you versus Little Mac. Who wins? it depends on who's playing Little Mac. Because, I mean, he's a tiny guy. I'm pretty sure I could take him. I mean, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, but come on. He punched out Mike Tyson. I mean, clearly, any guy who could punch out Mike Tyson, you can't handle that. Well, yeah, you know what? Again, depends on who's playing him. If I just set the controller there on the floor, I bet I could whoop him. All right? I'm just saying. I got a shot. All right. So now, having done that, we finished the Podomatic. There's nothing left but a little recap from GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. And that's it. Hey, all my bumper music songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. Wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. You want to get your very own pocket mod? Go to pocketmod.com. They'll give you instructions for printing and folding your own pocket mod for free. You want to do something nice for my podcast? Recommend it to your friends. Let everybody know, because if you enjoy this podcast, then spread the word. Let other people enjoy it. All right. If you want to contact me, email mike@nerdprideradio.com. Twitter @NerdPrideRadio, Facebook, facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me all the time is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll be best friends in the world. We'll have fun. All right, in lieu of the listener betrayal that I completely forgot to put up, Eli has given us one more punch of the R2 button. So, 17. 17 is from someone who listens to this podcast. Oh, 17 was from Billy Bob. You suck, Eli. Hit it again. 27. Not rejecting it because it's from Billy Bob, but rejecting it because we already did it from this Billy episode. Bob. It's from Stan. All right, Stan. Good for you, man. What's with all that's happened with Miley Cyrus? Do you still have all your Hannah Montana memorabilia?
Oh, let me tell you about the poster.
Funny you should ask. We just threw away our Hannah Montana poster.
We didn't throw it away.
A week ago. Where is it?
It's in my room. I'm trying to find stuff to hang it up.
Years ago. And I mean, years ago when Hannah Montana was relevant. When they were still selling posters of Hannah Montana at Walmart, we went and bought a Hannah Montana poster solely for the purpose of teasing Jacob. Because Jacob was such a heavy sleeper that our intent was we would go in the middle of the night while he's sleeping, and we would tape a Hannah Montana poster to his ceiling. And then he would wake up and there would be Hannah Montana there and it would be a big laugh for all of us. And because it's on the ceiling and kind of hard to reach, we were wagering that he would probably leave it up for a while because he just wouldn't take the time to actually go get a stepladder or a chair or something and pull it down. It wouldn't be easily reachable from where he was. And then we didn't do it. It was, we meant to, but we didn't have an opportunity. And so we had it sitting on the attic stairs, and just forgot about it. And I mean, when I'm saying it's sitting on the attic stairs, it's like you open the door to the attic, and then just around the edge of the door jamb is this poster rolled up and just leaning there, and it's just barely out of sight, just barely not visible. So that thing sat there for, I don't know, how long ago would we have bought a poster like this? How long ago would it have been appropriate to tease Jacob like that? I mean, 10 years? 8 years? That's how long that poster sat there. So my wife is cleaning off the attic steps. We had some boxes piled up there that need to be carried upstairs and this kind of stuff. And so she was getting everything sorted and cleaning out the attic. And on her way down, she notices it sitting there. She pulls it out. It's our old Hannah Montana poster that we never used. It still had the plastic on it even. Oh, how disappointing. And so, anyway, I went and we opened it up and Aiden was asking me something. So I called him. I'm holding up a poster of Hannah Montana as he's coming up the stairs. He's like, why the hell would we have that? So I got to tell him the whole story. And so, yes, we still have our Hannah Montana poster, apparently. I thought we threw it away, but apparently Aiden is keeping it for whatever reason. And that would be the only Hannah Montana memorabilia we have ever owned.
These are McDonald's toys, don't
they? That I'm aware of. Oh, there may have been some McDonald's toys, but that doesn't count. But you got that free with a meal. This is something we actually intentionally purchased.
Hey, there's a lot of things that are good that you get free with a meal.
Okay, so there you go. That was it. Say goodnight, Eli.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, R2.